How are you going to have a farewell to The Undertaker and not have Brother Love come out? I mean, you got Brother Love in the back. How do you not have Brother Love come out? He was the guy who walked him to the ring 30 years ago. This is your WWE Survivor Series 2020 review. I am the Solemn Monster. It was a farewell to The Undertaker here tonight, 30 years to the day, 30 years to the very event where he made his WWE television debut. Yeah, it just feels wrong. If this is the end, it really just feels wrong that The Undertaker will have had his last match and will have made his final appearance in front of exactly zero fans. Couldn't be helped, but it just feels wrong. Thank you, though, for choosing me for your Survivor Series coverage here tonight. Survivor Series, traditionally, many, many moons ago, used to be one of the events I look forward to all year. We're going back to when it was the Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving Eve tradition. It hasn't been that for many years now. Survivor Series, though, could be meaningful again. And you've heard me rail on this for weeks, and I think it was really apparent tonight. There was some good action on this show. I really thought that main event with Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, those guys went out there, they killed it, they proved why they could easily headline a WrestleMania. And frankly, if they can't get The Rock, probably should headline WrestleMania next year. Those guys, I thought they tore it down. They had a tremendous main event. I thought the tag team match with New Day and the Street Profits was excellent. Very good meeting and the right outcome. We'll talk about that. Sasha, Asuka, another Raw versus SmackDown match. They always have good chemistry together. There was nothing wrong with a lot of the matches, you know, as far as the Raw versus SmackDown stuff that I just mentioned. Not all of it was great. The Survivor Series matches felt completely meaningless. Nothing special about them at all. The name of the show is Survivor Series. So I can't sit here and tell you that this is going to go down as one of the best Survivor Series in the last 10 years. It won't. It won't. Save for a couple of matches, I thought this was a very disappointing show. This show will have no replay value beyond those who were big Undertaker fans who want to go back and see the Undertaker stuff at the very end. Even the Undertaker stuff. If you watch this show tonight expecting something like the send-off Shawn Michaels got, or more so Ric Flair many years ago, you probably were left very disappointed. But Undertaker did come out tonight, and Undertaker never said, he doesn't use the words retired or I'm done or I'm never going to wrestle again. Really, he didn't say anything other than stuff we've already heard him say in the past. Rest in peace. He's been talking a lot recently about how he's at peace. He's at peace with the idea of never wrestling again. You'll notice he never actually says the words. And in fact, I think there was a huge tell in the interview he gave to Stone Cold, and many of you haven't seen it yet. I watched it earlier this afternoon. He's asked point blank, and he gives a very wishy-washy answer on his future. So was tonight the last appearance of The Undertaker? Probably not. Probably not. But if it was, we'll get into the pros and cons and what was left to be desired. On the kickoff show, we had R-Truth. R-Truth showed up at the panel desk and he threw to a tribute that he made to the Phenom that he said was celebrating 30 years. Of course, they want you to think that they're throwing it to an Undertaker video package, but in fact, that is not the Phenom that he was talking about. The Phenom he was talking about was the Gobbledygooker, who also made his debut in WWE 30 years ago on this day at this very pay-per-view. He hatched out of an egg. He looks like a deformed chicken, turkey, whatever he's supposed to be. He was supposed to be the WWE mascot. That was the Vince McMahon idea. He's going to be our mascot. He's going to go to all the house shows, and he's going to take pictures with the kids, and he's going to throw t-shirts into the crowd. People didn't like the Gobbledygooker. We never saw him again except for a cameo here and there. I don't think we saw him again until the Gimmick Battle Royal at WrestleMania back in 2001. He makes sporadic appearances. Very depressing. When you see the Gobbledygooker on the independent circuit, he's like Lonely Virgil. He's sitting at a table. He's got some bird seed on the table. Nobody's coming over. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to talk to him. So R-Truth was showing him some love here. Akira Tozawa showed up. The Gobbledygooker showed up. And with R-Truth being distracted, the Gooker rolled him up, and the Gooker won his very first title in WWE. 30 years later, the Gooker is a champion. He is the 24/7 champion. And he takes his title and he goes and he runs off. R-Truth chases after him. As he was running away, one of his claws fell off. The camera, by the way, was showing them running away. And I don't think they realized that they were still on camera, because that camera lingered on them for a long time, to the point where when they kind of almost got to the back, you could see where they just stopped running and they just sort of, they kind of slowed up. But yes, the Gooker left the kickoff show as the champion, even though it looked like he was declawed. Later on during the pay-per-view, I can't even believe I'm reviewing this, but later on during the pay-per-view, Tozawa was using, he set a trap. Tozawa set a trap and he used bird seed. It was like a whole bird seed trail. The Gooker fell for it. He's throwing bird seed all over himself. And Tozawa rolled him up. He won the championship. R-Truth, though, showed up. He whacked Tozawa from behind with a bag of bird seed. And he pinned him to begin reign. I believe they said reign number 45 as the 24/7 champion. I mean, who could possibly give a shit at this point? I just figured since it's the Gooker, we may as well recap. I usually skip over the 24/7 stuff, but now you're up to speed. Nothing has changed. R-Truth is still the 24/7 champion. We'll see the Gooker again in about 5 years. See, if anybody was going to be the face of unionization in this company, I would like for it to be the Gooker. Maybe he could go talk to SAG and he could talk about benefits and healthcare and all that kind of stuff. He could be a trailblazer instead of poor Zelina Vega. Also on the kickoff, we had a dual-branded battle royal with absolutely nothing at stake. This was my biggest pet peeve about this pay-per-view coming in. Survivor Series can be one of the most important WWE shows of the year. If WWE put the effort in and wanted to make Survivor Series an event that people thought, oh, wow, you know, there's really, the stakes are high. Survivor Series really means something. It has an effect on the Royal Rumble, or it has an effect on WrestleMania, or it has an effect on the draft, whatever it may be. They have the power to make that happen. And year after year after year, Survivor Series feels even more and more trivial. Used to be one of the big four. We used to talk about when there was only four or five pay-per-views, Survivor Series was one of the big four. And you look at an event like Money in the Bank, right? More important than Survivor Series. It's fallen in the pecking order. How hard is it to say that there's a Battle Royal and the winner of the Battle Royal gets this, or the winner of the Battle Royal gets a shot at this belt, or whatever the case may be? Nope. Just a meaningless Battle Royal. Rey Mysterio, Murphy, Dominic, The Miz, John Morrison, Jeff Hardy, Ricochet, Elias, Kalisto, Shelton Benjamin, Cedric Alexander, Dolph Ziggler, Bobby Roode, Chad Gable, Shinsuke Nakamura, Humberto Carrillo, and Apollo Crews. Shinsuke Nakamura in the Battle Royal, no Cesaro. I don't know where Cesaro is. I don't know if he's hurt. Very odd that his partner would be in, but he was nowhere to be found. Maybe he didn't want to have anything to do with this. If so, he was the smartest guy of the bunch. John Morrison. Some people are very upset that The Miz has Money in the Bank and John Morrison is not featured more on the show. Well, you're not going to like this, because John Morrison was the first person eliminated from the Battle Royal. And just to rub some salt in the wound, the man who eliminated him, Dominic Mysterio. Such is the plight of John Morrison right now in WWE. Miz has Money in the Bank. John Morrison is getting eliminated on the kickoff show first in a battle royal by a rookie. That's how it goes. Them's the breaks sometimes. Dominic also eliminated Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. So John Morrison is in great company here. Jeff Hardy eliminated Elias. Final four were Hardy, Dominic, Miz, and Chad Gable, who is no longer wearing his Harlem Globetrotters attire. He's back to his traditional singlet. Gable clotheslined Hardy out of the ring. So we're down to three. Dominic had Miz. hanging on to the bottom rope. He was hanging off the apron, trying to hold on for dear life. And Miz pulled himself back under the bottom rope just for a brief second, only for Dominic to come in with a baseball slide, knock him out of the ring. Now, the referees on the outside were waving it off like, no, no, he got back inside, so he's not eliminated. Now, I don't know if we were supposed to see that. I think the idea was Miz was going to, you were going to think that he was eliminated and kind of keep him out of sight, out of mind. But you could clearly see the referee wave it off. The announcers acknowledged it. So there was no real drama here. We knew exactly where this was going. The Miz was outside the whole time. We knew he was going to come back in. But what we ended up with was a pretty good exchange between Gable and Dominic. I was very impressed. It was good to see Chad Gable in there doing his thing. These float-over, gut-wrench suplexes. It was only about 2 minutes, but I thought he and Dominic had a pretty good sequence of event. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind seeing the two of them work a program on TV. Based on what I saw here from this brief exchange. But Dominic caught him with a 619, dumped Gable out of the ring. Thought he had the match won, but he didn't. Miz came in, dumped out Dominic. And so the Miz wins. And the kickoff ended with them throwing it to AJ Styles. It was in the back. He's, of course, the captain of Team Raw. So they throw it to the back. And I guess the idea is that AJ is going to be in the middle of trying to rally the troops, right? He's going to be talking to his guys, trying to kind of get them all amped up for the match. But it looked like he was just kind of standing there. He's fixing his hair. He was waiting for his cue. All the other guys are just kind of standing there. And then as if somebody said, hey, you're live, all of a sudden he goes into AJ Styles mode and he starts pretending that he's talking to everybody. Like, this is a fine way for the kickoff show to end. So they went into acting mode. Oops. And with that, we were off to the races. So the pay-per-view opened with a traditional Survivor Series elimination match. This was the men's elimination match. AJ Styles, his bodyguard now, Jordan, is going by a shortened version of his last name. So his bodyguard's name is now Omos. O-M-O-S. Omos. Like Edward James Omos. That is his name. AJ Styles, Braun Strowman, Sheamus, Keith Lee, and Matt Riddle representing Team Raw against Kevin Owens, Jey Uso, King Corbin, Seth Rollins, and Otis representing Team SmackDown, the same Otis who was eliminated from qualifying for the Survivor Series. He lost to Seth Rollins, and he was simply slotted into the match by Adam Pearce on Friday night. No Big E. No Daniel Bryan, no real logical explanation why Otis was being picked for a spot that he already lost out on, but there he is. There's Otis in the match. 5 years ago at Survivor Series, Sheamus cashed in his Money in the Bank to become WWE Champion. Would we have a Money in the Bank cash in tonight? Well, we'll find out later on. Keith Lee finally debuted his new music. Sounds like he is once again singing the vocals. It was a little hard to hear. Look, beggars can't be choosers. I'm just happy they got rid of that crap-ass music he was coming out to. Finally, he has new music. Is it better than his original music? Not from what I heard tonight, but I haven't heard it close enough yet. But at least he has his own music. At least he has better music. They had to get rid of that awful, generic theme. And now he has his own music. Seth Rollins, the Messiah. First few minutes of the match, he tags in and he looks at his team and he says, for the greater good. And he turns around and he serves himself up as a sacrifice for a brogue kick from Sheamus. Sheamus kicks him in the face and pins him 1-2-3. And that was the end of Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is the first man eliminated in this match, very likely his last appearance for a while. A complete waste of a spot. An absolute complete waste of a spot here in this Survivor Series match. And no, Rollins did not at any point engage in the ring with Matt Riddle. I know there was some question about that. As I'm looking at everybody, once everybody was down at the ring, I noticed the two of them. I said, oh, that's very interesting. But there was no interaction between them. Hey, I mean, maybe that's why Rollins, he served himself up to be eliminated. He did not want to have anything to do with Matt Riddle. He would rather just drop to his knees and get kicked in the face than have anything to do with Matt Riddle. So maybe that's why. Maybe that's why he bowed out of the match early. So Team SmackDown now, they're having a discussion outside. They're trying to regroup. Braun Strowman jumps down from the apron. He runs around the ring and barrels over all of them. Just steamrolls right through. Kevin Owens runs wild for a little bit. He's giving stunners to everybody. He's giving a stunner to Keith Lee. He's giving a stunner to Matt Riddle. Sheamus. AJ Styles, though, catches him with a phenomenal forearm and eliminates him. So now Kevin Owens is gone. Matt Riddle, a little while later, he eliminated Baron Corbin with the floating bro. Otis ran wild for a bit, hit some suplexes. He even handed one to Keith Lee, which was very impressive. Otis gave Strowman a power slam and hit the caterpillar, but Riddle distracted him, and Strowman caught Otis with a running power slam for the elimination. That left Jey Uso all by himself as the one lone remaining member of Team SmackDown. It came down to Jey Uso 4-1, and he did manage to take out the entire Raw team. He did a giant dive out of the ring. Uso gave AJ a super kick. He was setting up for a Samoan splash when Omarosa. I have to catch myself there. I don't know why I'm thinking of Omarosa. Omos pulled AJ out of the ring. For the finish, Uso came off the top rope for a splash. Keith Lee caught him on his shoulders and turned it into a spirit bomb, and he got the pin. So Jey Uso is eliminated, and that is a clean sweep for Team Raw in the opening elimination match. I just actually finished watching the Vipers against the Visionaries from Survivor Series 1990, the same show where The Undertaker debuted. And that was another situation where it was a clean sweep. It was a clean sweep in that one for the heels. They went 4-0 on Jake Roberts' team. So this was not a good start to the night for SmackDown. I would go 3 out of 5. I'll be generous. I'll go 3 out of 5 on this. I mean, there was some good stuff in here, but just nothing close to some of the more epic is the right word, but there have been some really good men's elimination matches at Survivor Series over the last decade or so. This was not one of them. There was no drama. There was no drama even with the final pick on Team Smack. I think my biggest issue with this show, no real effort seems to have been put into this show. Survivor Series, from the moment they started announcing matches, felt like a complete afterthought. And there are just some shows that should not feel that way. Really, no pay-per-view should feel like an afterthought. Survivor Series is a show where you should put the time and the effort in to make sure you are putting out a card that is exciting, that people want to see. At no point until Drew McIntyre won the WWE title back, and all of a sudden I said, okay, now that's an interesting main event, 6 days before the show. But before that, at no point did I look at this card and think, I'm looking forward to Survivor Series. This looks like a tremendous card. I can't wait. It felt just slapped together at the last minute. No effort whatsoever put into this show. And that really was my biggest issue with this show coming into it. And that should never be the case when it comes to Survivor Series or any of these so-called big pay-per-views. There should be some effort and time put into thinking about what you want to do and why people should be invested in this show. What is at stake? What is on the line? What is exciting about this show? What is the big draw of the show? And that's what was missing. This show is The Undertaker. It's as if they looked at the show and they said, okay, The Undertaker, we're going to just promote everything around The Undertaker. 30th anniversary, final farewell, and fuck everything else. Everything else will just kind of fall into place. And that's no way to put together a card. So I've seen men's elimination matches far better than the one that we got here. I will get to your super chats in a second, I promise. I got them all lined up, and I appreciate everybody sending them on in. I see you guys. By the way, Shout out to CJ and all of our mods in the chat holding down the fort tonight. I do appreciate their help each and every week. They join me on all the live streams. We're live every Wednesday night after Dynamite, every pay-per-view, every NXT TakeOver. And they're keeping things in check in the chat, so my thanks to them. We have the Raw Tag Team Champions, The New Day, taking on the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, The Street Profits. Big E was not in the men's elimination match, but he was here. Big E was back with New Day. So all this talk about how the New Day was so heartbroken about being broken up. Oh, man, we're not going to be together anymore. And they were back together tonight. What did I say? What did I say weeks ago when they were weeping and we saw tears coming down Xavier Woods' face? You would think that, you know, some horrible tragedy happened. And here they are coming out as if nothing ever changed, right? They still do their podcast. Everybody freaking out about the New Day is breaking up. The New Day never broke up. So they were back together here on this show. And in fact, they were all dressed in this custom Gears of War attire. They came out looking like these giant robots, these giant machines. To me, they just looked like an army of Max Moon clones. I know Gears of War is a popular game. I don't play it, but I only knew that because that's what commentary told me. They were dressed like Gears of War. Okay, I thought they looked cool. But let's talk about the match, because this, it almost feels to me like a meeting of the past and the future. And the New Day still has, you know, many, many good years left in them, but New Day's been around now for about 6 or 7 years doing their New Day shtick. Kofi has been around a lot longer than that. Xavier Woods has been around a lot longer than that. The Street Profits represent the future. The New Day, in many ways, represent the past. There's no titles on the line on this show. Everything's non-title. So I looked at this match and I said that the only real outcome that I think would make sense is to put the Street Profits over because the New Day doesn't need it. 10-time tag team champions. The New Day have been around forever. The New Day's titles aren't even on the line. They lose nothing by losing this match. But a great match with the Street Profits, with the Street Profits going over, would mean far more to the Street Profits, a win would, than a loss would mean to the New Day. And thankfully, common sense prevailed here in this match. We had Kofi with an early trust fall on Montez Ford. New Day took over at that point. And Montez hit a DDT on Kofi, made a hot tag to Angelo Dawkins. So Angelo Dawkins comes in and he starts to run wild. Ford eventually tagged himself back in. New Day hit the midnight hour. Dawkins distracted Kofi, who ate a drop kick from Ford. Montez hits the frog splash, best frog splash in wrestling at the moment. But he grabs his ribs because his ribs had been worked over. And so he's selling the injury now. He's in great pain. He can't capitalize. He can't just, you know, go in for the pin on Kofi. Eventually, he covers, he drapes an arm over Kofi. Kingston gets a shoulder up. Kingston gives Ford an SOS. Dawkins breaks up the cover. Xavier Woods hits a missile drop kick. That takes out Angelo Dawkins. Montez Ford ducks the trouble in paradise. Connects with one of his own. Hits Kofi with his own move. And Xavier Woods follows that with a gut buster to Ford. Ford kicks out. Dawkins tags himself in, and Woods did not see this. So it was a blind tag. Basically, Xavier Woods did not see Angelo Dawkins tagging himself in. And the Street Profits hit a huge double-team blockbuster to Xavier Woods. And Angelo Dawkins pins Xavier Woods, and the Street Profits get a win. A well-deserved win over the New Day here in this non-title match. A win for SmackDown, the correct outcome. The correct outcome to what I thought was a very good first meeting between these two teams. Very good match. Correct outcome. Don't really have any complaints about this. I'd go 4 out of 5. I thought this was very good. And again, it made sense for all the reasons that I just outlined a few minutes ago. The Street Profits are who you need to build. The New Day are Teflon. The New Day are where they are. They're not going anywhere. The New Day are made men for life in this company. Far more benefit in having the Street Profits go over and get a big win on this show than the New Day getting a win? Because what does it mean? So, the right outcome and a very good match. The first on the show. We have the United States champion, Bobby Lashley, one-on-one against the Intercontinental champion, Sami Zayn. My biggest gripe with this match coming in, heel versus heel, and heel versus heel could work. I mean, it worked with Daniel Bryan and Brock Lesnar a couple of years ago. But there's got to be a reason for it. There's got to be a story. There's got to be some kind of build-up to it. There was nothing. Nothing. Because of this insistence that we have to do Raw versus SmackDown, because we are completely devoid of any ideas, we'll just keep doing Raw versus SmackDown every year. So we have Bobby Lashley heel against Sami Zayn, the chicken shit heel. Nothing is on the line. There's been virtually no interaction because they're on separate brands. And we ended up with a match that I thought sucked. I thought this sucked. We had Bobby Lashley come out with all the members of the Hurt Business flanking him. Sami Zayn is throwing a fit because he sees MVP, he sees Cedric Alexander, he sees Shelton Benjamin, so he's not happy about any of this. At one point, Sami complained of having vertigo, which was a callback to an earlier match, an earlier injury about a year or two ago that he had with Lashley when Lashley injured him. But then he tried to steal a pin, didn't work, Lashley kicked out. That was one of several little tricks that Sami tried in this match. He also tried to bait the other members of the Hurt Business to punch him. He goes, go ahead and punch me. Go ahead and punch me. Because he wanted Lashley to get disqualified. They didn't take the bait. He also tried to intentionally trip over MVP's leg and then claim that MVP tripped him and he should be disqualified. That didn't work either. MVP rolled him back into the ring and the Hurt Lock was applied. Sami Zayn tapped out and Bobby Lashley got the win. I'll go 2 out of 5. You know, Sami's antics, he's usually pretty entertaining. This match never should have taken place. This match never should have taken place in the first place. And this just wasn't very good. Jey Uso was backstage with his brother Jimmy. Outside of Roman Reigns' locker room, Reigns walks out. He's not very happy about the fact that Jey Uso lost in the Survivor Series match. And Jey is saying, look, my team, my partners, they couldn't get along. You're coming up with all these excuses. And Roman said, look, I don't want to hear your excuses for why your team lost. He goes, if you lost because you can't control your team, they don't fear you, they don't respect you, that means they don't respect me, that means they don't respect our family. And he said, if you can't make them respect us, then you don't have a place at the table. He goes, go join your brother and get out of here. Get out of the building. Go find Jimmy and get out of here. I don't have time for you. And he walks back into the dressing room. He's got no time for losers. Because we are the champions. Great song. Raw Women's Champion Asuka. One-on-one with the SmackDown Women's Champion, The Boss. Sasha Banks. These two always work well together. This was their fifth singles match since July. They had two in July, they had two in August, and the last two matches they had were both wins for Asuka, back-to-back. Asuka won the Raw Women's title back from Sasha at SummerSlam. She retained the next night, in a Lumberjack match, and that was the end. But they had four matches this summer, so this was match number 5, and this was the one non-title match. This was the most insignificant of all of the matches this year that they have had. This is the one where absolutely nothing was on the line. Except bragging rights. And what the fuck does that even mean? I say, they had a pay-per-view years ago called Bragging Rights. You know how many Bragging Rights pay-per-views they had? I think they had 2. You know why they never did any more? Because nobody gave a shit. If they cared, there would have been a Bragging Rights pay-per-view every year. But nobody gave a fuck. Who cares about Bragging Rights? Why can't they figure this out? Every year with this. Why can't they figure this out? Do I have to buy stock so I can call into one of these investor calls? Is that the only way to get my question through? Do I have to buy like one bit of stock so I can get on the call? What is so hard about making Survivor Series mean something again? Sound like a broken record, but I'm going to keep saying it over and over again until my message is heard. So as I predicted, this was Sasha's chance to avenge those back-to-back losses from August. They battled out of the ring. Sasha climbed up onto the barricade. She went for a Meteora. Asuka caught her coming down with a Codebreaker. And both women barely beat the count back into the ring. Sasha avoided the hip attack, kicked Asuka from behind, followed up with a backstabber, and that led to a near fall. Sasha hit a Meteora in the corner and then put Asuka in the bank statement. Asuka got out of it, went for the Asuka lock, and Sasha avoided that. Common theme in this match, a lot of reversals, a lot of avoiding moves and trading near falls back and forth. Very evenly matched. It was a very evenly matched match. Evenly matched match. That doesn't sound right, but okay. Asuka applied an ankle lock, ended up rolling Sasha into a pin. Sasha countered into a pin of her own for a near fall, and Asuka used a backslide, another near fall. Asuka hit the ropes. I think she may have been going for a Shining Wizard, but as she came off, Sasha rolled her up and got the pin. So I thought this was very good. I would go 3.5 out of 5 on this. Not their best match by any means, but I still thought it was really good stuff. And I believe, and I think they may have even mentioned this on commentary, I believe that this may have been the first time ever that Sasha Banks got a pinfall win over Asuka. She's beaten Asuka before, but I don't know that she's ever pinned her. So I believe that was the first time here tonight. Well, let's get to the final Survivor Series elimination, traditional elimination match. Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler, Lacey Evans, Peyton Royce, and Lana representing Team Raw, taking on Bayley, Bianca Belair, Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan, and Natalya representing Team SmackDown. Lana tagged herself in, even though the rest of the team made it very clear to her before the match that you are not to tag into this match. So she tagged in anyway. And she was, you know, she was in there for all of 90 seconds, but she was kind of holding her own. Didn't look that great, but she was getting a little bit of offense in there, and she was trying to hold down the fort. Eventually, Nia, though, tagged herself in, and Nia yelled at Lana, "Get out of the ring, stand on the steps, and don't move." And they're all yelling at her, "Get out of the ring, get out of the ring. Stand on the steps." Lana looked like, now she had her lipstick was all smeared. I thought her mouth was busted, but I think it was just her lipstick or makeup that got smeared. I don't know how that happened. But she looked like she was about to just burst into tears. So she's standing there. Again, this seems all designed to get sympathy on this woman. And if there were fans in the building, I really don't think it would have worked. I really don't. But they were trying. They were trying to get sympathy on her. She keeps getting put through tables, and she keeps getting bullied and picked on and yelled at. And so she looks like she's about to cry. Nia shoved, was throwing and shoving most of the members of Team SmackDown out of the ring. Nia then got knocked to the outside herself. And Bayley started climbing up to the top. She was going to do some kind of move. Some kind of big dive from the top rope down onto everybody down below. She gets cut off by Peyton Royce. And Peyton Royce superplexes Bayley from the top rope onto the pile of wrestlers down below. Lana is the only one standing. She's all the way on the other side, standing on the ring steps watching all of this. In the ring, Peyton Royce hits her deja vu finisher on Bayley and pins her. So Bayley, the self-proclaimed captain of Team SmackDown, is the first person eliminated from this match. Peyton Royce then was eliminated by Natalya via sharpshooter. Lacey Evans went for a moonsault on Natalya, who moved. And Evans ended up hitting the woman's right on Natalya and pinning her. So Bianca Belair, she got the better of Lacey Evans, went up top. She was distracted by Shayna Baszler. That allowed Evans to cut her off, and Evans hit a Spanish fly on Bianca, had her pinned. The Riott squad ran in, broke it up, and Baszler caught Riott in the Kirifuda clutch. Riott tried to tag out. She was reaching for Liv Morgan. She couldn't quite reach. And Riott rolled over onto Baszler. So the old kind of like Bret Hart, Roddy Piper, or Bret Hart, Steve Austin finish. She's got the woman pinned, but the referee is distracted. But while she is technically pinning Shayna, she's being choked out. And when the referee turns around, it's very obvious that Ruby is out cold. Shayna lets go of the hold. Then she pins her. And I love the fact that Ruby Riott is pinned and she's out cold. But as soon as she's eliminated, she's conscious enough to know, oh, I got to roll out of here. I got to roll out of the ring. I just thought that was a little goofy. At least have the referee, like, you know, shove her over or something. So anyway, Ruby Riott was gone. Liv Morgan caught Lacey Evans in a crucifix bomb and got the three count. So Lacey now is out of the match. And Liv Morgan worked over Nia Jax for a moment. Jax caught her with a Samoan drop and pinned her. Bianca was the last remaining member of Team SmackDown on the women's side. And she drop-kicked Nia off the ropes. Baszler, though, had tagged in. And so she ended up going for the Kirifuda clutch. Bianca escaped the hold, went for some sort of springboard, or I think it was like a handspring move. But Shayna saw it coming and caught her, put her right back in the Kirifuda clutch. And Bianca was trying to power her way out of it. She got up to her feet, and then she collapsed. But she collapsed in the ropes. That was a rope break. Shayna would not let go. The referee counted to five. She didn't let go. He called for the bell. And so Shayna Baszler was disqualified. Nia Jax teased a table spot. She was going to put Bianca Samoan drop through the announce desk. Bianca, though, got out of it, shoved Nia into the ring steps. Bianca, though, realized that the referee is counting, and he's up to six or seven. She tries to make it back into the ring. Nia Jax, though, manages to get back up and stop her. And she ends up being backdropped. Nia gets backdropped over the barricade, but it's too late for Bianca to get back in. She tried, but she didn't make it in time. She got counted out. And that means that Lana is the sole survivor of the match. She wins the match for Team Raw. Lana as the sole survivor was always the clear finish. I mean, it's what I talked about in my prediction stream the other day. I'm sure a lot of podcasters and YouTubers and other people probably said the same thing, that however it goes down, Lana will likely be the sole survivor. So to me, that really was not the surprise here, but that doesn't mean that's the finish I wanted to see. What I would have preferred to see is Bianca Belair go on to be the sole survivor for the match and have a really dominant performance. That would have been a real coming out moment for her. That would have really kind of inched her up towards that next level. That did not happen. They chose to give the moment to Lana. This is what they've been building to with all the table bumps. And yet, when it was all over, even though they've been building this for weeks, this felt like a colossal waste of time. And another missed opportunity. That's what it felt like. Felt like a colossal waste of time. This was built up like it was supposed to be this big feel-good moment for Lana. But the way they did it was just cheap. And fans, let me tell you something. If there were fans in the building live, they would have shit all over that finish. And the reason they would have shit all over that finish is not just you have people that might not like Lana. They would have shit all over that finish for the way it was done and the fact that Bianca Belair did not get put over at the end of this match. Now, Bianca will be fine. She's still new. They kept her pretty strong. I mean, look, she was the last member of her team. And she didn't get pinned. She didn't win, but she didn't tap out. She didn't get put out in the clutch by Shayna. She didn't get pinned. So it's not like they didn't bury her. They, you know, she'll be fine. But the idea that they did, you know, instead of choosing to really elevate somebody and put her over strong in the end, they chose to go with Lana and to do it by just having Lana stand on the steps and do nothing. That 90 seconds of offense that Lana got early in the match was the only thing she did in the entire match. She literally stood on the steps and did nothing. And they thought that this would make for a real sympathetic finish. People love the people are going to get behind Lana. I would almost guarantee you, and it might depend on the city they're in, certain markets would have just ripped this to shreds. I don't think the fans, if they were in the building, would have been as kind to this finish as WWE thinks they would have been. I'm certainly not. I don't see what this accomplished. The woman got bullied into standing on the ring steps. She didn't fight back. She didn't stand up for herself. She just stood there and took it. And by accident, she won the match. Even in the scenario that I floated in the predictions, she gets put through a table again by Nia Jax 10 times. And then either Bayley or Natty, the last person probably people would think would go on to win this match, but someone who also berated Lana in the past when they were together on Raw, they think they have the match won, but they don't realize that Lana's out. Now, they couldn't do the finish that way because they already did it in the stupid Battle Royal on the kickoff show. They did it with The Miz. So right there, they screwed the pooch. They couldn't do that finish anyway. But at least in that situation, Lana has to get into the ring. She's got to roll somebody up. She didn't do anything here. She stood there on the ring steps. And we're supposed to cheer. Yay! Who cares? I'll go 2.5 out of 5. I didn't think this was a very good match anyway. 2.5 out of 5. WWE Champion Drew McIntyre against the Universal Champion Roman Reigns. This was a much more appealing match than the one they were promoting for weeks, which was Roman Reigns against Randy Orton. So at least we got the better of the two matches. First several minutes of this were kind of feeling each other out. Honestly, it was very slow. A lot of headlocks, a lot of stalling, which you see sometimes if you have two guys, you know they're going to go 30 minutes, let's say. I don't think this went 30 minutes, but it's very slow. But they were taking their time and they were building things up. 10 minutes in, things started to pick up. There was this hellacious Samoan drop by Roman Reigns. McIntyre kicks out. Roman goes for the Superman punch. Drew sidesteps him, hits a spinebuster into a pin attempt. Roman kicks out. Outside the ring, Roman gets sent into the ring steps. Back into the ring, Reigns catches Drew as he's coming back in, so he cuts him off. And Roman starts talking. And this is one of the benefits of not having people in the crowd when you're in the empty building setting like that with all the fake noise. I don't know if they turn the mics up or what they do, but you can hear Roman Reigns. You can hear him trash talking, and he starts trash talking, and he calls Drew, "You're number two. Come on, number two." I think he was saying, "You're number two," unless he had to say, "Let's finish this match. I have to go take a number two." I think he was calling Drew number two. He goes, "This is what we call the fourth quarter, son." Superman punch attempt. Drew avoids it, hits the Future Shock DDT for a very close near fall. We have the setup for the Claymore kick, but Drew gets caught with the Superman punch. Roman tries locking in the guillotine, but Drew hits an overhead throw. Roman's a big dude. So he threw this guy halfway across the ring, and in comes McIntyre, but Roman posts him in the corner. And Roman hits a spear. Drew rolls through, though. As Roman is coming in for a spear, Drew rolls through. He somehow counters the spear. And he turns it into a Kimura lock. Although Roman's arm is behind him. He had it on in a bit of an awkward way. But they said it was a Kimura lock. He had the hold locked on. Reigns got out of it. Outside the ring, Reigns catches McIntyre running in with what was supposed to be a Samoan drop through the announce desk. He gave him a Samoan drop on top of the announce desk. Unfortunately, the desk did not break. So he picks him up again, and the second time McIntyre goes through the table. And now we know why Nia Jax did not put Lana through a table for the 10th time, because they were saving this spot. They were saving it for the main event. That's why we didn't see it in the women's. I was thinking, what? She didn't go through the table. That's kind of strange. Even after she won, I figured Nia was going to put her through the table anyway. You got to put her through the table 10 times. What, are they just going to go to 9? It'd be like a wrestler climbing up in the corner to do the punches and only going to 9, which, by the way, Hogan would do that all the time, and it would annoy the fuck out of me. He would punch the guy in the head 9 times and then stop. That's like spiking the ball at the 1-yard line. You've made it all the way down the field. Just go the extra yard. Maybe she'll get put through the table 10 times tomorrow night. It's my OCD kicking in. She's got to go through the table 10 times. Did not happen tonight, though, because of this spot. So McIntyre finally, after being put through this table, McIntyre gets up And Roman Reigns spears him through the barricade, right through the wall. Immediately throws him inside, goes for the pin. Drew kicks out. Reigns with a spear, but Drew kicks him. And Drew hits the ropes looking for the Claymore kick. And finally, this time, Roman connects with the spear. And again, Drew McIntyre kicks out. Reigns, now this is where the match, you could feel it, right? Getting kicked up into the next gear. Reigns sets up for one more spear, but as he comes out of the corner, Drew catches him upside the head with a Claymore kick. That then knocks Roman back into the referee. He bumps the referee out of the ring. So down goes the official. That brings down Jey Uso. McIntyre, though, swats him away. And when Drew turns back to Roman, Roman hits a low blow. Super kick by Jey Uso and a Superman punch by Roman Reigns. He locks on the guillotine choke. McIntyre is fading. He's trying to fight it. He's fading. He's fading. And finally, he goes out. And Drew McIntyre is unconscious. And the Universal Champion gets a win over the WWE Champion. Not exactly a clean win, but a win nonetheless. I am very surprised that we did not get a Money in the Bank cash-in or a Money in the Bank cash-in attempt on what is the 10-year anniversary to the day that The Miz cashed in Money in the Bank and became WWE Champion for the very first time. I thought for sure we'd at least get a cash-in attempt. No sign of The Miz. The Miz got his Battle Royal win. And I guess he was content with that. Maybe the Battle Royal win means more to him than the WWE Championship. Not that I'm complaining. I have no interest in seeing The Miz actually cash in and win. But this was fantastic. This match could have absolutely headlined a WrestleMania. Without question. And at WrestleMania, I assume the match would have gotten another 5 or 10 minutes tacked onto it. Same thing, right? Start slow and build and build and build. In front of an actual live audience. This was excellent stuff. This match, without the cheap finish, with more of a decisive win, maybe a win for Drew, this could have easily headlined a WrestleMania, and I believe it still very well might. If they can't get The Rock, after watching this match, this seems like the match to me. Just a matter of, does Drew move to SmackDown? He would have to in order to make the match happen. I don't know if they want to move him over to SmackDown. But this was fantastic. I would go 4.25. I would go 4, because it had the cheap finish. And I would go 4.25 out of 5 on this. This was easily the best match of the night. Without question. Well, then it was time for the final farewell. Final farewell to The Undertaker. 30 years to the day that he made his debut at Survivor Series. I watched part 2 of the Broken Skull Sessions, which dropped on the network earlier today between Stone Cold and The Undertaker. And it's great. 2 hours long. And they cover a lot of stories that they didn't cover in part 1 many months ago. But I was waiting for it. I was waiting to see if Austin was going to ask him the question. And he saved it for the very end. And he says to him, you know, he's asking him, what do you think your legacy is and all that. But basically, he's asking him, is this it? And The Undertaker simply cannot bring himself to say the words. He cannot bring himself to say, yes, I'm done. Or, yes, I consider myself retired. He can't do it. What he does say is that for the first time in his life, for the first time in his career, he is at peace. He is at peace with knowing that physically he can't really do it anymore. He's given all that he can. He's at peace with it. But he did say that, first of all, if he could physically do it, he would do it forever. He would do it until he just drops dead. But he said, if Vince came calling, if the old man needed me for something, if Vince came calling, well, never say never. And I just shook my head. Not that I was surprised at that, but I just, for all this talk about, yes, I'm at peace with it, I've come to this point in my, if Vince called on me, because that's been the case for years. Undertaker in his mind has retired about 5 times already, but it's always Vince McMahon who says, "Hey, Mark, I got an idea. Got an idea, pal." That will never change. So excuse me, despite all the pomp and circumstance here, I don't believe that this is the final farewell for The Undertaker. They trotted out a whole bunch of special guests for the big celebration here. In order, it was Shane McMahon. They all got an entrance. Shane McMahon, The Big Show, JBL, Jeff Hardy, who had that great ladder match on Raw in 2002 with The Undertaker. Mick Foley, who, in my opinion, as Mankind, is The Undertaker's greatest rival. The Godfather, the Godwins. First time we've seen Henry O and Phineas. I mean, I guess Phineas was around as Midian in the Attitude Era, but the first time we've seen Henry Godwin on WWE television in, what? It's got to be 22, 23 years, probably. It's looking pretty good. Gray, but he's looking pretty good. So we had the Godfather, the Godwins, Savio Vega, and Rikishi, all members of the BSK group. The one missing member is no longer with us, that being Yokozuna. Kevin Nash came out to his NWO music. And as Kevin Nash is coming down to the ring, they're talking about the epic match between The Undertaker and Diesel at WrestleMania. And I think it was Michael Cole who said WrestleMania 12. Corey Graves corrects him and says, "I think it was WrestleMania 11 or WrestleMania 13, but it was definitely not WrestleMania 12. And they main evented. He said Diesel and Undertaker were the main event. So according to Corey Graves, he thought that Diesel and The Undertaker was the main event of WrestleMania 11 or 13. He corrected Michael Cole, but what he did was he corrected somebody who already gave the correct answer. And to his credit, a few minutes later, after some silence, maybe somebody got in his ear, and he corrected himself. He said, "I stand corrected. Before the internet destroys me, it was in fact WrestleMania 12. All is forgiven." You couldn't let that hang. Couldn't let that hang. But he corrected himself, so it's all good. Booker T came out, Shawn Michaels came out, Triple H, Ric Flair, Kane, who just, you know, I look at Kane coming down to the ring. You know, Mayor Kane, and he just had this look on his face, like, what am I doing here? Like, I had to throw this ridiculous out because, you know, he's the mayor now. He's a politician. He's in a suit and tie every day. And here he is walking down to the ring in this ridiculous mask with this ridiculous wig. I don't know. He just looked to me like, all right, I'm here. Let's just get this over with. And we never saw him again. Because after this, they threw it to a long video package interviewing a whole bunch of stars about Undertaker, including John Cena, Batista, Edge, Stone Cold, all the people who weren't there in person, about how great The Undertaker is and how legendary The Undertaker is. When they came back live, everybody was gone. All of his friends were gone. His brother was gone. They vanished. He made them disappear. And the only person in the ring, and he did not get an entrance, was Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon's greatest gimmick creation is and will forever be The Undertaker. So he gets credit for that. But Vince McMahon was standing in the ring, only appropriate that he would be there. And he said, "Tonight marks the end of an era." And I just thought to myself, "No, no, 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 no. You're not fooling me with this shit again. You tried to pull this shit on me in 2012. Don't give me this end of an era shit." I was there in Miami when you told me it was the end of an era, and you fucking lied. So I don't believe you. You're a liar. So this is the end of an era. Whether it be the WWF, and he did say that on purpose. I was shocked. He said WWF or WWE Universe. Either way. He said, "Tonight we say goodbye." I thought, you would think this was a funeral or something, the way that he was talking about this guy. He goes, "Tonight we say goodbye. They say nothing lasts forever. But they're wrong. Because the legacy of the Undertaker will live on eternally. And with that, he introduced the Undertaker. Vince McMahon looks like he needs an Undertaker. I don't know who's doing his Botox or his makeup. He looked horrible. He looks like he needed an Undertaker. Now I know why he doesn't want to be on TV so often. So then we got what sounded like a like an old like MIDI version, M-I-D-I version of the Undertaker's theme music before his actual theme music kicked in. You know what? And I realize at this point, I said it sucks. It sucks that they couldn't do this in front of actual people. It couldn't be helped. It couldn't be helped. This really was the best time to do something like this, 30th anniversary at Survivor Series, but their hands were tied. I mean, there was only so much they could do. I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying it sucks that this had to happen in front of a bunch of screens in an empty building. Not the way that The Undertaker probably envisioned what he may in his mind believe to be his big final farewell. Now, I was pulling for him to walk out in that original Undertaker gear. No dice. Didn't get my wish. Still the best entrance, though, in all of wrestling. Still the most epic entrance of anyone, anywhere in wrestling. Even better if you could have been there at one of the WrestleManias. And I was very lucky. I was at a whole bunch of Mania. From 28 on, I, you know, saw some of his greatest entrances. And to be there live and everybody bust out the lighters. And you got the lightning and the blue light and everything. It's quite an experience. I can see why people thought, even if he doesn't wrestle, he could just come out and do an entrance. There are people who would pay to go to the shows just to say that I was there for an Undertaker entrance. And on the Broken Skull Sessions today, he brought that up. Undertaker brought that up and said, yeah, you know, I have people telling me I could do that. But he goes, it would just cheapen it. For me to just come out and chokeslam somebody or give him a tombstone, it's not fair to the younger guys. And it just cheapens the whole thing. And he's not wrong. It kind of, you know, it makes sense. I can understand why he would feel that way. But there's nothing like a live Undertaker entrance. So then we had piped in chants. We had piped in chants of Undertaker, Undertaker. We had piped in chants of thank you, Taker. He said, now my time has come to let the Undertaker rest in peace. And he dropped to one knee for one last Undertaker pose. And this was the coolest moment of the entire thing. This was a pretty emotional moment, too. If you are a longtime fan who remember Undertaker and Paul Bearer being together, the one person really missing from this celebration is Paul Bearer. He died a number of years, probably about 7 or 8 years ago now. I think 2013, he passed away. The Undertaker drops to one knee for one last pose. And all of a sudden, we see a Paul Bearer hologram. Like the Tupac hologram. We got a Paul Bearer hologram, which is even cooler. He was holding the urn. And the Undertaker, it looked like he was saluting Paul Bearer one last time. Even though Paul Bearer was not at the Survivor Series in 1990 when he debuted, but that's okay because everybody associates Paul Bearer with The Undertaker. That was cool. I thought that was a very cool visual to end the segment on. It was the highlight of the entire segment. That was very cool. And then we had a 10-gong salute. They played The Undertaker's gong 10 times. As he continued to kneel, and then he stood up, he walked down the aisle, he took one last look over his shoulder, he did that Undertaker stare back, and then he turned again, he raised his fist in the air, and that was it. And he walked off, and I thought to myself, see you in Saudi Arabia, because we have not seen the last of the Undertaker. I can't say when we'll see him again. I don't know if it'll be in 6 months. I don't know if it'll be in a year. I don't even know when they're going to be able to go back to Saudi Arabia. It could be a while before we see this guy, But do I think we have seen the last of The Undertaker? No. No. And based on his own words, talking to Steve Austin, it doesn't seem like in his mind he's totally closed the book on that either. If there is money to be made, or if there is a request, or if Vince McMahon has an idea, this man has such blind loyalty to Vince McMahon, he looks at him like a father figure, that if he has an idea for The Undertaker to come back and do something, then by God, The Undertaker is going to come back and do something. Now, if this is it, if this is the end, then what a career. 30 years. Now, a lot of those years, towards the end especially, he was not working full-time. It's not as if it was 30 full-time years. Undertaker has been part-time for a long time. He's had a lot of injuries. He's missed a lot of ring time due to those injuries. He may be, because of his longevity, as compared to, oh, I would say almost anybody else in the company, main eventers or not, has had more injuries and more time off from injuries than anybody else in WWE history. Unless you want to count the totality of Shawn Michaels 4.5 years away. I count that as one injury. But no one's had more time off because of injuries than The Undertaker. So this guy has put himself through hell. He has absolutely thrashed his body. He has destroyed his hips, his knees, his back. He wears the wounds every day he wakes up of a career that cannot be rivaled. There will never be anybody else who can have the kind of career that The Undertaker has had. There will not be another streak. You can't do it. It's impossible. Not that it's impossible for Vince McMahon to say basically a fake sport, hey, I'm going to put this guy over, 15 years in a row at WrestleMania. Find me somebody else, though, who's going to be around for 20 or 30 straight years in this company. It's not going to happen. So he is a rare breed. He has etched his place in history. And I have all the respect in the world for this guy and what he has accomplished and what he has put himself through. And I think it's noble that he has all of this loyalty towards Vince McMahon, but I think Vince McMahon does him no favors by dangling that carrot and keeping the door open for him to come back. I don't think it does him any good. Maybe it does his bank account, but let the guy rest in peace. Let the guy ride off into the sunset and definitively close the chapter on his career. And I know they wanted to make it feel that way tonight, but I just cannot bring myself to believe that this is truly going to be it, but it should be, because the guy's got nothing left to prove. He's got nothing left in the tank. So if this was the final farewell and the final salute to The Undertaker, I think that that hologram with him saluting Paul Bearer and riding off, I wish there were people there, but you know what? It's as good as it's going to get. His last match with AJ Styles, if you can call it a match, it's not going to get any better than that. You got to headline one night of WrestleMania with arguably the best match on the entire show. What can you do to top that? So that's my thoughts on The Undertaker's final farewell. And let's see what you guys thought of this pay-per-view. I'm very curious what the overall thoughts were of Survivor Series. This looks like one of those NXT polls. 1,500 votes in so far, about 66% thumbs up, 34% thumbs down. So overall, a positive score for Survivor Series. Not an overwhelmingly positive score, but a positive score nonetheless. Victoria Ellerby, were Vince's eyebrows distracting, or was it just me? Also, my boyfriend Evan is a huge fan of yours and sitting next to me, and it is our 6-year anniversary today. Well, that is awesome. Congratulations. Congratulations to the happy couple on your anniversary. Yes, Vince's eyebrows, Vince's entire face is very distracting. I don't know what's going on there. Looks like a wax figure. Very scary. Joe Olivo. Did Vince McMahon go to see the Kardashian family plastic surgeon? Hey, I'm glad I'm not the only one making these comments. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just being honest. John Garcia, did you notice that Vince looks like... did you notice that Vince McMahon looks like the 1989 Joker now? Jack Nicholson. He does a little bit. He does. He actually does. Although Jack wore it better. Jack is still my second all-time favorite Joker behind Heath Ledger. Dry chicken without flavor. Happy 30 to the Undertaker. I am still dry chicken without flavor, but I only added turkey. Ah, yes, dry chicken and turkey, he says, without flavor. I didn't even notice that. I didn't even notice the little name change there. He's already getting ready for Thanksgiving, I can see. Abdul Rahman, wow, with the $50. I missed that earlier. With the $50 drop, Boa's line, "She's coming, she's coming," is better than Survivor Series 2020. Hey, I was reviewing this on the podcast earlier today. That's what Boa said. William Regal came knocking on Boa's door on NXT this past week. He was knocking on the guy's door because the guy didn't show up for work at the PC. He goes, where have you been? I can't talk right now. She's coming. She's coming. If William Regal came knocking on my door and I was in the middle of doing something and I was telling him, she's coming, she's coming, I would say, leave me alone and let me finish what I'm doing. Leave poor Boa alone. The man is, he's busy. Alex Jimenez, did you like the spinner belt? No, I did not. I didn't like the spinner US, and I did not like the spinner WWE title. Jackalope Music, see you in Saudi Arabia. You're the best, Solomon. So, well, you know it's true. I only say it because it's true. Jonathan Coleman, you think WrestleMania will have fans? I do. I do. I don't think it'll be that many, but I do think it'll have fans. Juan Ocampo, I feel like crap. Got tested today. Take care. Ooh. Well, I hope that turns out okay for you. How long does that take, by the way? I heard that rapid testing is not that reliable. So what does it take? 36 hours or so? Well, let me know how that turns out. Hopefully you are negative and everything is okay and you feel better. Skeptic Skeleton, I honestly thought and hoped that the Fiend would have attacked the Undertaker at the end or shown up at some point as a passing of the torch moment. That's the idea that I pitched on the podcast. And we didn't have any Fiend and no Alexa Bliss, and they're probably the best part of Raw. They weren't even on the show tonight. There were a lot of people who weren't on the show tonight who had been featured and winning on TV recently. Daniel Bryan had no spot on the show. The Fiend had no spot on the show. They've been key parts of Raw and SmackDown the last few weeks. Dry chicken again. The Undertaker should start his own liquor brand. Big Evil loves his whiskey. Well, not only was he downing shots of Jack Daniels on the Broken Skull Sessions with Stone Cold. Stone Cold called him out on this whole Undertaker wines thing. He's got his own wine. WWE actually put out Undertaker and Ultimate Warrior wine. I agree, whiskey would make more sense, but The Undertaker has his own wine, in case you didn't know. If you're a wine drinker, you might enjoy that. Erasmus Solis, I am 40, been watching wrestling for 30 years, and was lucky enough to see that Survivor Series in 1990. I agree with you, I think Undertaker makes an appearance when fans are allowed at the venues, but not for a match. And fantasy booking will get you nothing but disappointment. Says Frost 757. I know. I agree. I keep telling myself that. Every time I pitch some kind of idea, every time I'm like, well, why don't they do it this way or do it that way? I can't help myself. I can't help it. I always want things to be better. But invariably, I set myself up for disappointment. You are correct. But I feel like we all do that. Right, we're all guilty of that. We're too invested. That's the problem. I think we're too invested in this whole thing. And Abdul Rahman, you have not seen Joaquin Phoenix's Joker yet. No, I have not. I feel like I'm the only person who has not seen Joker. I do have it on my watch list. I know. I know. For shame. For shame. I know. But I'll have to make it a point, you know, this week. This week, Thanksgiving, I might have a little bit of downtime. I feel like I never have any downtime. If I have any downtime this week, though, I will try to finally watch Joker. Is it worth it? I've heard that it's worth it. And David Rivera, his super chat's coming in here in a second. Kind of cool that I share my birthday with the exact date of The Undertaker's debut, November 22nd, 1990. So what you're saying, David, is that you were the one who hatched from the egg at Survivor Series. Were you in the costume tonight? Are you now the former 24/7 champion? By the way, I did want to pose one question. For those of you who have seen Joker, I will hopefully see it. The only two Jokers that I really talk about are Heath Ledger and Jack Nicholson. For those who have seen it, where do you rank Joaquin Phoenix? So where would you place him in if that was the top three? Where in the top three does his Joker rank as compared to the other two? Very curious what your response is. And then I'll watch it for myself and I'll see. So if you guys are down, I am down to take some of your calls and get your thoughts on Survivor Series. I mean, it's getting kind of late here, but we could take some calls. And I'll read off any more super chats that come in. So stand by. I'm not going nowhere. I'm going to be right here with you. But that's the phone number. I'm going to activate the lines for you here in a second if you want to give a call in. Take some of your calls. Oh, Jared Leto equals worst Joker ever, says Oofman Entertainment. I forgot about Suicide Squad. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I didn't hear good things about Jared Leto in that role. But you guys can chime in and let me know about all that stuff. And we will begin with area code 520.
Hey, Sorrow Wancer. This is Luke from Maricopa, Arizona.
Hey, Luke.
I'm sure it's midnight where you're at right now.
It is. It is a little after midnight here on the East Coast.
Some questions I just want to bring up here. First of all, where was Kurt Angle? I heard he was going to be on this show, and he didn't come out at all when the Legends were making their way to the ring.
Yeah, Kurt Angle was rumored. PW Insider, they were the ones, I think, who broke the news a few days ago and said that he was expected to be there, and I don't know. The only thing I could think of is there was obviously some other engagement or reason why he couldn't make it. I don't know. I assume he wasn't there, or else he would have been on camera. So, yeah, I don't know where Kurt was.
All right. Another question for you. And this is kind of an interesting thing. After Jey Uso interfered in the Reigns-McIntyre match and helped Reigns pick up the win, I just had a thought that came into my head. Do you think this could open the door for a slow-burn heel turn for Jey Uso, kind of like seeing the way Roman sees things over time, and then, in a weird way, kind of becoming his underling, similar to what Murphy was to Seth Rollins?
Well, I think he already is. I mean, he's, maybe it's not a full-on heel turn yet, but that's pretty much already happened. I mean, we've already seen that play out on TV, as far as him going off on Daniel Bryan and injuring him and putting him out for a few weeks. And a lot, I mean, Roman treats him like shit, but that's basically what he already is. He's an underling, you know, he's fallen in line. Now, maybe Jimmy Uso, that, you know, his brother has not yet fallen in line. When and if he's ready to come back from his knee injury, I would expect him to just kind of be right there with Jay, and they'll have their own little Samoan group, their little Samoan faction. But Jay Uso, I think he's basically already a heel.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because, well, and thanks for the Daniel Bryan thing, because I just haven't been watching TV for the last couple of months. I've been, every now and then I just have to take a break from watching WWE TV because of how crappy it is.
Yeah. I hear that from a lot of people. I hear that from a lot of people.
I actually have a couple of fun questions that actually might stir some debate in the chat. Now, this is a question I wanted to ask during the Hell in a Cell stream, but you didn't do calls back then, and
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. We'll take the two more, and then we'll move on because I know we got other people waiting in queue.
Two more questions. Okay. Mm-hmm. Number one, then. Which, obviously, you know about you know, how WWE screwed up the Hell in a Cell concept in 2018 with the Roman Strowman match, and in 2019 with Rollins and The Fiend. It kind of reminds me of when WWE screwed up with the Royal Rumble match in 2014, and then in 2015, where it was just a complete fucking disaster. My question to you is this: which do you think WWE screwed up more, the Royal Rumble match or the Hell in a Cell match?
Well, I mean, the Hell in a Cell match. I mean, they screwed up Hell in a Cell by making it a pay-per-view and just kind of throwing it out there every year, even when it's not needed. The Rumble, you'll have bad Rumbles, you'll have good Rumbles. Look at this here. You know, for all the terrible things they did in the Royal Rumble a few years ago, I thought this year's Royal Rumble was excellent. So the Royal Rumble will have good years and bad years. The Hell in a Cell concept, I think, unfortunately, has been damaged. And I don't know that it can be fully repaired.
That's nice. And here's actually another a very interesting question.
Sure.
In the last couple of months, you've brought up several matches from 2005. You did you kind of, in a way, you reviewed the Shawn Michaels Kurt Angle match. You talked about, you know, this week in wrestling history, bringing up, you know, Joe's match with Kobashi and the triple threat match at Unbreakable in 05. So buy, rent, or sell on Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels, Styles, Christopher Daniels, and Samoa Joe at Unbreakable, and Joe versus Kobashi?
Well, those are three excellent matches. I have a personal affinity for Michaels and Kurt Angle. I think it's one of the best matches I've ever seen. I'm going to buy on that. I would rent on the... It's tough. But I would probably rent on the Kobashi match and sell on the Unbreakable match. If I had to rank them that way, that's probably how I would do it. I can't bet against Shawn and Kurt, though. It's one of the best WrestleMania matches of all time. Tremendous stuff. Dry Chicken, it's got another one coming in soon, says you should check out the Joker's Injustice 2 and Mortal Kombat 11 bantering videos. You won't be disappointed. I will have to check that out. I have no idea what that's about, but I will definitely have to check that out. 407.
Hey, Solo Monster, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
This is Alex, the Florida man, once again. Glad you took my call.
The Florida man, indeed. Well, that's where Survivor Series was tonight.
Yeah,
Florida.
Really? Oh, yeah. Well, they've been in Florida for a while.
They're going to be in Florida for a while. They're going to move the Thunderdome in a few weeks, but they're going to move it from point A in Florida to point B in Florida.
To Tampa.
That's right.
Yes, sir. So I have a couple questions myself there real quick.
Sure.
Were you disappointed, you know, looking at the look, I thought Drew and Roman had a great match, but when you look how similar their titles are, don't you wish they had different looking titles?
Yeah, I mean, I say that all the time. I mean, it just looks – they've had titles that have looked worse, but they're just giant logos. They don't have any distinct identity, and I wish they would. So, yes, I wish they would put a little more effort into making them a little more unique. That was one of the reasons why I loved them keeping the old IC belt around. It looks so much different than every other title in the company. And it still does. I mean, they changed the design of that one, too. I still prefer the old one, but at least it's different. It's not just a giant logo.
And it was one thing when, like, you know, the women's title came out and it looked similar. I thought that was fine, but then just copy-pasting it for the Universal title, I thought it was real lazy.
Yeah. Hey, Braddock in the chat, it depends. We get a lot of calls that come in. Boy, I've gotten hit by bills. August, I think, was the worst. He was asking, by the way, how much of the phone calls cost. I think August or September, I got hit bad. I got hit with, it was like a $300 or $400 bill. But I took a crazy number of calls that month. So it depends. If I keep fewer lines open, it doesn't cost as much. But again, the super chats help a lot when it comes to kind of keeping that cost down. But it depends. Depends how many calls I take in a month. But anyway, you were saying.
Well, hey, thank you for all your all that contribution you do for us, Mr. Solemn Officer.
Hey, you guys have been killing it on the Super Chat, so I appreciate the support. It helps out. I'll say that much.
And my last question is, if you got to have an entrance for AEW, let's say, what would your theme song be?
If I had an entrance?
Yes, if you had an entrance.
Oh, my goodness. If I had an entrance, what would my theme song be? I would probably come out to Vanilla Ice Ninja Rap from the second Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. I would dance to the ring.
Well, I never heard that song, so I better look that up.
You should. How you've never, you need to go right now. You need to go on YouTube and you need to find it. In fact, better yet, watch the movie. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. The Secret of the Ooze. It came out in the early 90s.
I've only seen the first one. I remember in the beginning of the movie, like, Raphael's sad because he lost his sigh. I remember the first movie not the second.
You need to see the second. You need to see the second for that. You need to see the second for Super Shredder, even though he's only in about 60 seconds of the movie at the very end. Do yourself a favor and go watch the Ninja Rap, and then you'll see why. That's going to be me one day.
Good stuff, Solid Monster. Thank you.
All right, sure. I'm committing to that. Any AEW people out there now? I'm going to come out to Ninja Rap. I'll have to do the dance and everything. Why did I commit myself to this? I should be committed for saying that. That's what I should be committed to. Let us go to the Lone Star State. 956.
Hello.
Hello, 956. I hear you. What's going on? Who am I talking to?
Yeah, this is Erasmo from Laredo. Listener for, yeah, Ben Erasmo for listening.
That's awesome. That's good to hear from you.
Yeah. Hey, man. Nice hearing from you too. Just real quick. I have a comment more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Not really on the show. I mean, everything that happened with Taker was all well and good, I guess. I mean, considering the circumstances. But I heard you said something about Power and Glory, and that they had one of the greatest finishers of all time.
Oh, yeah, the Powerplex.
Which I think they did. Yeah. What was that thing? Was it a Superplex with a...
Yes.
What was that thing?
Yeah. So,
Flash?
No, what would happen is Hercules would do basically a superplex out of one corner. And a lot of times before he even hit the mat, Paul Roma was already airborne coming out of the other corner for a giant. It wasn't a frog splash. Yeah. It was just a giant splash.
I just thought that was amazing. I mean, for a 10-year-old watching that kind of athleticism, and let's not even go to the Paul Roma dropkick, which I think was probably the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those guys are severely underrated. Wouldn't you agree as a tag team?
As a tag team, yeah.
Back when you had Arthur.
Yeah, look, I mean, as a tag team, yes. As a tag team, yes. Hercules, if you go back and watch Hercules, especially at that point, he was really all jacked up. He wasn't that good at that point. He really couldn't do much. But Paul Roma was really kind of the real athlete of that team, at least at that point. But them together and that finish... They could have gone a lot further than they did. And could they have had a tag team title run? Yeah, maybe for a short period of time. So I do think they're underrated. I don't think enough people talk about them because they weren't really featured and they were never the champions. But do I think they're underrated as a team?
Yeah,
as a team I do. But I don't want people thinking that, you know, I'm saying Hercules, he could do all these amazing things. At that point in his career, I didn't see it. It was mostly Roma.
What I hated about Hercules growing up was his punches. They just looked, I don't know, weird.
They didn't look good.
I don't know why.
You could just say it. They didn't look good.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the call, man. And I've been a listener for, like I said, 10 years.
Wow.
I started listening back in 2011 with CM Punk and everything. I think I tweeted you a couple of times as well. And keep up the good work, man.
Thank you.
Thank
you, man. I appreciate that. 10 years. We just celebrated 13 years. This whole month is the 13-year anniversary of the Sound Off. We just had a whole 13-year anniversary Q&A stream. We did the Sound Off Inbox, which is up on the channel almost 3 hours. I answered almost 90 questions. And we're going to be doing more of that very soon here on this channel. And I am thinking that we'll probably do something live on New Year's Eve. If you guys are down, I like that idea. So there's going to be a lot of fun stuff coming to the channel. But thank you to him, man. That was awesome. 10 years. Let's go to 562. Is this Brent?
It is. Salamonster, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Brent?
First and foremost, just hearing your idea about the New Year's Eve thing, I think that's a good idea because, like, there's no parties happening this year. Nobody's going anywhere.
Well,
I think it's a pretty good idea.
Some people will, but we'll leave them out of it.
Outside of Florida.
yes.
So you mentioned a lot of stuff about the Survivor Series. And actually, one of the reasons why I enjoy the podcast is because it's really eerie hearing you talk about stuff and how it's almost like you're reading my mind. It's like you're saying the things that I would say if my podcast were a wrestling podcast. It's kind of eerie. And you mentioned a lot of the stuff. But I think one of the main takeaways from this Survivor Series for me had a lot more to do with, like, production and really the direction of the show. And I think it kind of speaks to more of a bigger overall problem with WWE right now. So, like, stuff like you mentioned, this lasting shot on R-Truth and the gobbledygooker and watching them chase each other, but then smile and laugh at the curtain, or AJ Styles getting into character before his promo happens, or the Undertaker coming out and they do the lift thing, but then twice we see the lift. Like, these little things that take you out of the show. Like, we all understand what wrestling is, but these little things that take you out of the show and at a certain point almost insult your intelligence. Am I the only one who sees this and sees this as a problem?
No, I mean, I think it's more, you know, it's almost like an issue of quality control. Yeah, even the stuff where they kind of,
Yes. They
have these camera shots where they linger for too long. I mean, there's a lot of little things like that they do that kind of annoy me. And yeah, they'll do stuff that takes you out of the moment. I wish they wouldn't do it. My bigger issue with the production stuff is more certain camera uses of the camera and the shaky cam and the camera cuts. That kind of stuff, I wish they have to. I mean, they have to just cut back on that sort of thing. I think they get too cute sometimes for their own good. But yeah, I mean, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It does. I think if you do too much of that, I think it would bother me.
Do you think that would, I don't want to say improve, but change with the inevitable changing of the guard at the top? You know, we've got Vince and Kevin Dunn and, you know, at the top right there. And we've all heard the rumors of Stephanie saying that, or you peeped the rumors that Stephanie would replace all those people when she and Triple H officially take over. Do you see that improving?
No, well, it depends. I mean, if they bring in new people, they're going to have their own view of how things should be shot, how things should be done. So yeah, I would assume if there were a whole new team and a whole new producer and director who were brought in, there's going to be changes made to the way the product looks, to the way the product is shot. And I think stuff like that would be patched up. So yeah, of course, it's going to be somebody else's vision. So it would have to be different. It would have to be improved upon.
Yeah. And one final question before I open up the queue to somebody else. And again, this may be just me nitpicking and stuff, but like when you're watching stuff in HD and stuff like that, and you see these title belts, somebody else is talking about the titles, the Velcro on the belts, does that not irritate? Am I just sitting here like the old guy shaking my fist at clouds, or is the stuff like that what really also kind of helps take you out of the moment?
You are the guy shaking your fist at the clouds, but I am too. So, I mean, we kind of have that in common. The Velcro just looks cheap.
I mean, I am.
It might be easier for them. Right. Yeah, it might be easier for them to get the belts on and off. I mean, on SmackDown Friday night at the end of the contract signing segment, I think it was, when I think Heyman I think either Heyman handed the belt to Roman or Roman maybe picked it up off the table and he went to walk away. And you can hear the Velcro ripping sound.
Ugh.
And I was like, oh, God. Because I used to have Velcro sneakers when I was like 5 years old. That's what that reminds me of. I used to have these, what was the brand? It was Stride Right, maybe. I forgot what it was. But anyway, I had these like Velcro sneakers when I was a kid. So that's kind of what I associate the Velcro with. And yeah, it makes it look cheaper. But then again, these belts, they kind of look cheap as it is. So for these belts, I guess the Velcro works. Right. Now, if you put Velcro on the Winged Eagle, then you and I are going to have a problem. Because Velcro and Winged Eagle, those two things don't go together. Or the big gold.
Yeah.
That don't work.
Right. I'd be fighting right along with you.
Awesome.
You have a good night, man.
All right, you too. Yeah, this Velcro thing has to die. I'm sorry. I don't know whose idea this was to put Velcro on the championship belt. They look like toy belts. When I bought replica belts at the WWF house shows back in 1988, that was Velcro. That's how you attach the belt. It was a foam belt and it had a Velcro attachment. Now they have Velcro on the belts. Thing is, this company's got bigger problems than Velcro. So I'm not going to rant on that. I mean, he asked me a question, I gave him an answer. But yes, I do think it is very, very cheap. Let's just take a few more here and then we'll wrap up. Thank you to everybody who's still sticking with me here. I know we lost a whole bunch of people when we had that little hiccup in the middle, but I think we got most of the people back. So it was very cool that people stuck with me through that. 929.
Hey, Salamanca, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, this is Tracy from Brooklyn. I can't believe I got on.
Yeah, I can't believe it either. It was just, I happened to go to you. Totally random. I'm glad I picked a fellow Brooklynite.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask, you know, how did you like, you know, what WWE has done with Survivor Series and basically turn it into Clash of Champions, you know?
Well, no, they haven't, because Clash of Champions, you actually have titles on the line. So Clash of Champions actually means more than Survivor Series does.
That is true. It's basically a bunch of exhibition matches, you know, which is really turn Survivor Series into a nothing pay-per-view, if you ask me.
Yeah,
but
nothing screams, if this were like an old pay-per-view, you had to pay $50 for it. Nothing screams, boy, let me put my $50 down for this pay-per-view than a bunch of non-title exhibition matches.
Yeah, and that kind of harpers to your point that you made earlier, like, you know, how they just, like, the build-up for these pay-per-views are, like, have been so lackluster. And I feel like ever since they've gone to 10, you know, since they've gone to the WWE Network, and then, like, you know, they put the emphasis on, you know, building up the pay-per-views for you to buy for $50. I feel like that's why they, you know, they just put these lackluster builds up for these pay-per-views, because they just know, hey, if you have the network, you're going to watch it anyway, you know?
Yeah, and we kind of predicted that would happen many years ago, and it has, and it's really too bad. I mean, it's a very sad thing, because it wouldn't take a whole lot of effort to just make Survivor Series a show where there is something tangible on the line, and stuff that happens, whether it's in the main event only or up and down the card, but you have matches that actually have consequences. Again, whether it's draft-related, Rumble entry-related, WrestleMania main event-related, whatever it may be, and it's... For whatever reason, they either just don't care or they don't think it's important enough. And maybe they're right. Maybe people are going to watch Survivor Series no matter what. I would like to see it mean something again.
Yeah, that's my thing. It's just like WWE has done a very, like, they've done a job of, like, over the last 15 years of, like, things just don't matter. You know, the Andre Memorial Battle Royal does not matter. Survivor Series does not matter. Hell in a Cell no longer matters. You know, it's just like, what are we watching? You know, nothing's on the line at this pay-per-view. It's just a bunch of grudge matches, you know, and it's kind of disappointing.
Is it though? These are grudge match. I wouldn't call these grudge matches. What was the grudge match? Where's the grudge?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess, the, Yeah, really, man. No, yeah,
there's no grudge. What grudge? Match. What grudge did Sami Zayn and Bobby Lashley have? There's no grudge.
Well, I think Bobby's still mad at his, you know, the old sister thing, you know, from last year.
Oh well, yeah, I guess that's a good point. Yeah, that would piss me off too if I were him.
But yeah, I just got a couple of comments though. On these matches, you just can't have your opener with the traditional, you know, I put that in quotes, traditional Survivor, you know, with Raw and SmackDown, and you have a clean sweep. It was just a boring match that had no stakes, and you just had a clean sweep of SmackDown as your opener. You just can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I just think the tag team match, if you flip-flop the tag team match with the Raw versus SmackDown Miz match, that would have been a very good opener, you know? And, you know, as far as the women's, you know, Survivor Series match, whatever happened to debuting superstars at Survivor Series? You know, I know she got hurt, but, like, how about, you know, debuting Chelsea Green for this match and then doing something with her on SmackDown?
Well, I mean, they were going to.
This upcoming...
I mean, I got to defend them on that. They were going to. She was going to. I have no doubt in my mind she was going to win that qualifying match on SmackDown 2 weeks ago. So, had she been in that match, she likely would have been eliminated, because I think the plan, no matter what, was always to have Lana be the sole survivor. But we would have seen Chelsea Green in that match tonight, so I don't blame them for that. They were trying to promote her for the show, and unfortunately, fate took a different turn for her. But I agree. I mean, you know, years ago, probably one of the more famous Survivor Series debuts was Scott Steiner showing up at Madison Square Garden and yelling at the ring announcer, "Give me a fucking mic," which everybody could hear when he said that. So yeah, I'm less bothered by that. Just give me a good card. Just give me a reason to tune in. I don't care if there's new people debuting, people returning. I don't care. I mean, it's nice to sprinkle in some surprises, but just give me a card. Right. That looks and feels exciting, like you actually put more than 5 minutes of thought into it. Not asking for much. You know, the talent went out there, and again, I thought Roman and Drew killed it. And I thought Asuka and Sasha, they had a good match. Not their best, but they had a good match. Tag team match was very good. And everything else was just kind of there. I was disappointed by both Survivor Series matches. And since that's the name of the pay-per-view,
absolutely.
That's kind of a problem. Anyway.
Yeah, me too. I was disappointed by both. The cheap way to get Lana over, which if we did have, you are so right. If we have fans in the stands, they would shit all over that. You know, they would shit all over that finish. And, but hey, the main event saved it. You know, I think Drew and Roman, who had a WrestleMania match, by the way, which is so funny. If they had this match, if they could build on this match at a upcoming WrestleMania, that would be dope. But a title has to be on the line. It just can't, you know. I don't know how to do that.
No, it will be. If they do the match, it'll be for the Universal title. They'll find a way to make that happen. The match a couple of years ago was just the match to get Roman on the card. It was his first match back from his illness, and it was just kind of there. They kind of shoehorned it in, and it was in a bad spot because it came right after the big Kofi win, but before the actual main event, which was the big Becky Lynch kind of crowning moment. So that's sort of their forgotten about match. That really was a nothing match. But if they put these two together at WrestleMania next year, of course, it'll be for a championship, and I think it would probably have Drew going over this time. But look, you and I are in agreement on all of these points, and I'm glad you were able to make it through.
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, listen, I love your shit. Been a big fan for almost 7 years. You know, you're 13 years in, so you're a moody-ass teenager now.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know,
oh, yeah.
Just keep up the good work. And my last comment on the Undertaker thing is, it's just how sad was it? Just like the whole piping and the noise. No one is in the building, and like, you know, this is his man's send off, but you know.
Not
the
ideal.
The next time I want to see this at his Hall of Fame speech. That's the last time I want to see the Undertaker. I'm Undertaker out, you know.
Well, that,
Hall of Fame speech.
That's a good point, is that if they will have an opportunity to actually get people in the building to give him more of a proper reaction when he goes into the Hall of Fame. So all they have to do is just wait a few years. He doesn't have to go in right now. I just assume if they have a Hall of Fame next year, it's just going to be everybody who was supposed to go in this year. So yeah, 2022, 2023, by then, you know, you get people back in the building, big Hall of Fame ceremony, and then you can have actual people in the building chanting "Thank you, Taker," and chanting his name, and he can give a speech. So he'll have his moment. It was just sad, like you said, in front of a bunch of virtual screens. But when it comes time for him to go into the Hall of Fame, that's when he'll get his fan reaction.
Yeah. But yeah, so thanks. You've been generous with your time. I'll let you answer a couple more calls and enjoy the night and keep up the good work.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, he brings up a good point. I had forgotten. You know, he is eventually going to go into the Hall of Fame. All they have to do is just wait until they get actual people. If they put Undertaker in the Hall of Fame 5 years from now, I would certainly hope that we've got people back in the buildings and he'll be able to get more of a proper send-off and a proper reaction that way. Let's take 781.
Hey, perfect timing, actually, with what you just finished up on. Who do you think Undertaker should face when he returns?
Wait, say that again?
I said perfect follow-up from what you finished up on.
Yeah.
Who should be Undertaker's first opponent when he inevitably returned?
Oh my God. Well, Father Time has been his biggest opponent, but who knows? I mean, look, I could still see him getting back in the ring with AJ Styles for a proper match, since they never had the chance to have one this year. You know, who knows? Who knows who it'll be?
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
But that was half sarcasm. In all seriousness, I wish instead of having each guy parade their ass to the ring, they would have let them have a 1 minute. And that 4 minute video package, WWE has done such better video package for such smaller occasions.
Look, they did a better video. They did a better video package for The Undertaker this year to that song, the Reckoning.
Yeah, exactly. Like I can
recount Temptation.
Every WrestleMania.
Yeah, that was,
has had a better video package.
Yeah,
than what they
great.
Presented.
Yeah, I agree.
So they did bare minimum the whole pay-per-view, and then my girlfriend loved the whole Last Ride show, so she stayed up to watch this, and it was, the Paul Bearer thing was cool for me, but like overall, just did not cut it. If you're going to build the pay-per-view around something, come on now. That was you the least possible.
Yeah, it could have been handled a little bit, but it was just very weird how they all just sort of vanished. And I was kind of hoping, because we've been seeing so much of him out of character. Like, I get him wanting to do the Undertaker entrance, and I think there was a way to do it where he does the traditional Undertaker entrance, but then is sort of maybe shedding some, like the robe and the hat and some stuff, and it's almost like he's stripping the Undertaker away, and you're left with Mark. And then he can make...
incorporates at least a bit of who he really is.
And then
it would at least be a tease at points, too.
Yeah, I agree. Cool.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. We got a super chat from Abdul Rahman, $10, says, off topic here, do you think NXT is overexposing William Regal of late? He has been all over the shows recently. Yeah, they've been using him a lot more and that's one of the things I liked about Regal. You would only see him when there was a reason. He was like the Jack Tunney of NXT, only with better facial expressions. You only saw him when there was a reason to see him, but when you saw him, it usually was a big deal. And they have been putting him on TV a lot more. But the thing about Regal is he's so great that I don't even mind. But they probably should dial it back a little bit. Because one of the good things about him is that you don't see him all the time. And Bryant Becerra. I don't know if Bryant was around when I did the contest earlier, but Bryant is our fourth place winner in the contest. Bryant won the replica NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. And he said that, in his opinion, Survivor Series was a 6 out of 10, which sounds about right. I could agree with that. And so could Baked Undertaker. They're in the Undertaker 420 Super Chat. But again, congrats to Bryant. If he wasn't aware, he is now one of our winners from the Wrestle Rumble contest a little bit earlier. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Bryant is good people. I like when good things happen to good people. Makes me happy. All right, why don't we do two more quick ones, and then we'll wind down here. How's that sound? 910.
Quick one. Oh, 910, how's it going?
It's going good. It sounds like I caught you in mid-conversation.
Man, oh man, you actually, I mean, you did, but you didn't. If you, you know what, I'll give you a little history lesson. Actually, do you remember, back in February, like right before, the Revolution pay-per-view on, the AEW pay-per-view, I had called you. That it was my first time calling you, but this time right here, I had no idea, because I was trying to order the Survivor Series, and then my big brother ordered it, and he had one of my older cousins come, and he was trying to they just came in and was like, hey yo, did you watch Survivor Series? I said, man, hell no, I'm over here trying to listen to the Solo Monster review right now. And it was like, oh, so how's that going? I said, man, I'm on here now. So I've literally been tuning in with you the entire time.
Well, hey, I'm happy to hear it.
I appreciate it, man. I just found out that my damn team didn't win, but yeah, Team Raw won as far as the guys, but the women's didn't go exactly the way I panned out, because I thought that Team SmackDown was going to win, but I guess we didn't. Yeah, because I was actually rooting for Bianca Belair tonight, but she didn't win tonight.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were. I think a lot of people were, but she's going to be fine. She's the star of the future on SmackDown.
Definitely. And as far as that's concerned, I'm just, hey, like, just keep striving, man. Just keep striving. I mean, I don't like to dive too much in my personal, but I lost a sibling this year to police violence. So yeah, that was back in May. So like, ever since that happened, I just been trying to focus more on just being a better wrestling fan, man. And just, you know, trying to live life a little bit easier. But yeah, tonight, yeah, you really came through tonight, though. I really appreciate it, though.
Sure.
Like I said, I might not have got everything I wanted with Survivor Series, but hey, as long as I got to kick it with you and kick it with the rest of the fans, shouts out to Dry Chicken and Lord Freezer. But other than that, I just been here kicking it with y'all, and I thought I'd call you and see how things going, man. But other than that, I'm okay, and the show was okay. The show was all right tonight.
Yeah, I agree with the last person. He said 6 out of 10. Somewhere around there. I think that's fair. I mean, it was not a horrible show, but it by no means was up to the standards of what I would hope a Survivor Series would be. But yeah, I think you and I are in agreement on that.
Oh no. Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, cool. Survivor Series is just Survivor Series, man. I mean, heck, what is it? Well, I don't even know if it's going to be TLC this year, but regardless of what it is this year, that's the name of it. Well, TLC this year. I mean, other than that, I'm just ready to get the hell out of 2020, man. Like,
I think we all are.
Like, when I get off this phone tonight, I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing, tuning in to you and tuning in to everybody else that I watch, and we're gonna have us a better year next year. And I just keep watching wrestling like I've been doing.
That's it, man. Whatever makes you happy, and you'll keep tuning in, and I'll keep I'll keep cranking out the streams. If you keep listening, I'll be here.
I sure will.
All right.
I sure will. I don't, been trying to work and everything, but, hey, Jace, man, you have you a good one, man. We got Raw coming up tomorrow night, Dynamite on Wednesday, and I'll be tuning in for the streams, man. You keep doing what you're doing out here, man. And just so you know, just to keep it stamped, I'll send you out a tweet before I go to sleep tonight. I'll send you out a tweet. You'll see it.
Perfect.
Good night, man. Have a good one.
All right, man. Have a good night. You too. Wow. All full of energy. It's 12 to almost 1 o'clock in the morning. I wish I had the energy that he had. But that's awesome. Yeah, I think we do agree on one thing. Cannot wait for 2020 to be over. So if we end up doing that New Year's Eve stream, we can say fuck off 2020 and ring in 2021 together. So hopefully I'll put that together. But man, he was all wound up. Got me all excited here. Spanish Goddess just wanted to say what's up to Solomonster and the chat. We got Rico sending in a super chat. Just got an email about winning the ECW belt. There's our other winner. Third place winner. Thanks for doing the Wrestle Rumble contest solo. Have a great night. Well, congratulations. Congratulations on your victory. Your championship belt will be sent out tomorrow. You'll be getting that, I'm sure, from them very soon. Brian Becerra with the $20. He finally realized it. Holy crap, I won. Just heard you say I won. Thank you, Wrestle Rumble. See, we do good things for good people here on this stream. This is how it works. Spanish Goddess again. Did you hear about Omega Wrestling injured? I did not. Is this some kind of breaking news? I have not heard about Omega Wrestling with an injury. I assume it must not be too serious if he is competing. I hope not. You know, he's supposed to defend his AAA Mega title at Triple Mania next month. If Triple Mania actually happens, it sounds like it would be the day after Christmas. So if he's wrestling injured, that's no bueno. Not good. That is definitely not a good thing. And let's, how about this? We'll do 818.
Hello? Jason?
That's me.
Yeah, what's going on, man? Sorry. Yeah, this is my first time calling. I've been, I think I've been watching you since I was like in eighth grade, so like 2012, I want to say.
Wow, long time.
And yeah, man, I wanted to ask you. I guess I wouldn't sort of off topic, but this is going to like something about the Ruthless Aggression era. I feel like it was a kind of a forgotten era. I know you're fond of the New Generation era and the mm-hmm. Attitude era, but I feel like the Ruthless Aggression era is kind of underrated because, like, I mean, I just think like the mid-carders, like back then, like let's say like in the Attitude era, the mid-carders, you believe anyone could be the champion, you know? And
yeah, of course.
Like everyone was over, but now I feel like like now, sorry, I'm a little nervous, but
no, don't
like,
be.
I don't even believe in the mid-carders, and I feel like now, like, they're kind of using, like, people they should have used 10 years ago, like, you know, MVP and you know, Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley. I feel like, you know, they kind of used them a little too late. You get me? I feel like there was, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
that's why the Ruthless Aggression era isn't us.
MVP, yeah. You know, MVP is, I think, great in the role they have him in. And he should be more out of the ring than in the ring. So I don't have as much of an issue with. Shelton Benjamin is, yeah. I mean, Shelton now is 45 years old. I mean, you would never know it by looking at him. I think he looks great. But it sure would have been nice if he would have gotten that kind of push, you know, 10 years ago. So all of this time has gone by. But, you know, better late than never. I'm glad to see him in a position on TV. And Ruthless Aggression, I don't know that I would say it's underrated. I think a lot of people talk pretty glowingly about that era. They talk about the SmackDown 6. They talk about Edge and Rey Mysterio and Benoit and Eddie, you know, Los Guerreros, Brock Lesnar. There's a lot of great stuff going on SmackDown in 02 and 03.
Yeah, I get you, but I feel like, you know, I feel like some mid-carders were like a missed opportunity, maybe like, you know, Carlito, Mr. Kennedy. MVP now.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, you know, on the two that you just mentioned, I mean, I don't really blame WWE for those. Kennedy was in line for a huge opportunity. And I feel like it was a combination of bad luck and also him probably doing some stupid things that he shouldn't have been doing. And he kind of screwed himself out of an opportunity. Carlito, the big knock on him is that he just was, I don't know if lazy is the right word, or he just wasn't putting in the maximum effort. And if he had done so, he probably would have gone a lot farther than he did. That was always the knock on him, that he thought either he was bigger than he really was, or he thought that he should be higher up on the card, and he wasn't, so he wasn't trying as hard. So I don't know that I necessarily hold those two against WWE. But yeah, you can probably point to some other mid-carders who should have been pushed harder, who they dropped the ball on. There's always going to be mid-carders. Dolph Ziggler's whole career, he's made a whole career out of being somebody who they could have done more with, and they dropped the ball with him. So yeah, I agree. You could probably pick some people from that era who would fall into that category, but I don't know that underrated, though, is a word I would use for that whole time period. I think people, you know, obviously the Attitude Era gets talked about because it was the Attitude Era, right? I mean, it was the Monday Night War. It was this big period. Ruthless Aggression, though, I think people recognize that, especially on the SmackDown side, that was a pretty badass era.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, I was just, like, thinking, like, you know, people like, you know, Randy Orton, like, they still pushed him, even though he had his own, like, problems and issues. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like, you know, maybe they could have, like, you know, keep trying a little bit more with them, I guess. But there's actually one last thing. I know you're not, like, but it's kind of, like, related to the Attitude Era. I mean, I didn't grow up watching that. Like I said, Ruthless Aggression.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I feel like at a time period, like 2016, they had guys like over, like they had, I really cared about Braun Strowman, you know, Samoa Joe. I know he was like injury prone and, you know, but I feel like, you know, like in the Attitude Era, there were, I know you're not a fan of this, but you know, when they would like, you know, switch the title constantly, I feel like they could have done that with Strowman and then like Joe back in 2016, you know what I mean? I feel like they, like those are missed opportunities, like, you know, Lesnar, those long reigns, like, I've been noticing that Zara has been having longer reigns.
Yeah.
But I feel like if they just flip up the title, it would make things a little more interesting.
Yeah, know? No, I don't disagree. I don't disagree. A lot of missed opportunities with people like Joe, like Braun. And they finally put the belt on him earlier this year, and it was over. I mean, you know, whatever momentum and fan support he had, I mean, that evaporated 2 years ago. So sometimes they just wait too long. And at that point, there's no water left in the sponge. You know, it's all gone. It's all dried out. So unfortunately, I don't think it's the last time that they're going to be making mistakes like that with some people. That's why I always cringe when I hear about someone's going to be called up from NXT. Because you never know. Are they going to be the next Sasha Banks? Or are they going to be... Pick the worst person they've botched from being called up, Andrade or whoever you want to pick. Is it going to be someone like that? You just never know. That's kind of what worries me about Rhea Ripley. But I think in her case, she'll probably end up okay. She's blonde, so she'll end up okay. Vince will do right by her. I'm not too worried about her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, like, I don't really, like, watching like wrestling as much. I mean, I just listen to you, like, you know, good way to get my mind off things. And, you know, I just, you know, I'll let you go though. Like, you know, just have a good night. I got like kind of frozen, but, you know, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
My first time calling, and I hope to call soon. Thank you for your response. I've been thinking about this question for like weeks. I'm like, I should, or months. Like, I just, you know, but thank you. Yeah, have a good night. Thank you, Mr. Solomon.
All right, you too. I'm glad you're able to call in. I appreciate it. We could be here all night talking about drop balls and missed up. Well, I don't mean that. I don't mean those drop balls. Those balls dropped a long time ago. Leather Rebel, buy or sell next year. Hangman or Big E as the champion? Got to be Hangman. Big E, I think at some point he might get there. It doesn't have to be next year. They could take their time with him. Hangman, though, the story is right there. And it might not be until later in the year next year, but I think it's got to be Hangman. I think Hangman gets there first. Spanish Goddess has some more information on us for us on Omega. Omega has a torn labrum, but is wrestling through the injury and trying to avoid surgery per The Observer. Also, who is your most favorite Survivor Series team? Favorite Survivor Series team. It was one of those like late 80s, early 90s teams when they had names. I liked a whole bunch of those. And of course, now I'm blanking on any one individual team. So I have to think about that. The Omega thing, though, that sucks. Torn labrum, I mean, that's a serious injury. And what really sucks about that is, you know, he's hoping to just kind of get through these matches he's got coming up and avoid surgery. But if you put the championship on him, then he's your champion, and there's certain expectations about being the champion and being in big championship matches. And I mean, he probably would be in that position for much of 2021. But a torn labrum is probably not the kind of injury that's just going to heal up on its own if you're not taking any time off. So, yeah, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound good at all. That's horrible timing, if that's the case. Thank you to everybody who has voted so far in the Twitter poll. At Solomonster is the place to go. I dropped a 2.5-hour podcast earlier today, that being episode 679 of the Solomonster Sounds Off, a gigantic This Week in History segment, 45 minutes or so. You'll see it pop up on YouTube in the next day or so. And hopefully you guys are enjoying those history segments as much as I am making them for you and doing all the research. Part of it's research because there's certain dates and stuff that I don't necessarily remember. But a lot of the details, man, you know, when I realize, oh, okay, that's right, this happened this week, it all comes flooding back to me. I love talking about it. I'm going to pull some new threads for the next RSPW. So I'm going to be working on that this week. I'm going to be live with you again Wednesday night. The new Thanksgiving Eve tradition, Solomonster on Thanksgiving Eve, talking AEW Dynamite. We're going to close out the month of November, all of our live streams. We're going to close them out in a big way. I want all of you to join me. All of you to join me on Wednesday night. And don't forget, Pro Wrestling Tees has a Black Friday week sale that kicks off this Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. So all shirts in our store are 20% off. You go to prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. You can get the new 13-year anniversary shirt. If you've been waiting, if you would like to pick it up, that's going to be the time to do it. And I think we're good for now. It's 1 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. Thank you all for joining me here, choosing me for your Survivor Series coverage. I had a lot of fun, and I hope you did too. And again, I hope you guys will join me again later in the week and again on Sunday next week for episode 680. We're getting close to 700, man. The 700 Club. It's coming up soon. But first, we got to get through 680 next Sunday. Until then, be well, stay safe. Have yourselves a wonderful Thanksgiving. Eat a lot of food. Eat a lot of turkey. And I will see you again very soon for more Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.